Hello, Screeters. Full transparency, I recorded the majority of this episode a week or two ago when I released the episode before that, the NTX wrap-up, but I didn't want to release it too soon. I did find it really interesting, though, because I had forgotten that I hadn't released it, and then on the Gamerhood Discord, people were talking about the essay I mentioned from Prismatic Wasteland. So, and I thought that maybe they'd already heard it, and that's why people were talking about it. But apparently, you know, there's other news outlets out there. People are finding out about things and talking about them at the old Gamerhood. So, if you want to get involved in these conversations and maybe get into some games or have some laughs, come over to the Gamerhood Discord and join up. If you don't know how to find the Gamerhood Discord, just find me and I'll invite you. You can email me at hnfhobbs@gmail.com. So, as far as the episode goes, I have a few call-ins, one, maybe just two, one from Rich and one from Jason Connerly. And I talk about this Prismatic Wasteland blog post about the OSR being dead, and also thoughts on higher tier level play in a BX style game. Maybe you like it, maybe you won't. I don't know. What I do know is today is Wednesday. What day is it?
Hump day.
Man, sometimes I'm so corny, guys. June 28th, 2023. I am Jason Hobbs, and this is Random Screed.
Hey, Hobbs, other Jason calling it about second levels of play. Here's my question for you, which is definitely a rabbit hole and a side jaunt. But you mentioned Fantasy Heartbreaker coming out of the Forge. So is that where the term was originated from? It's definitely not where the idea, as I understand it, came from. My understanding of Fantasy Heartbreaker is somebody's ideal game, whether it's AD&D with house rules or whether they come up with their own, but it's basically they're not happy with what's out there, so they're putting out their home game or their home rules with all their love and everything in there, hoping it'll be the biggest thing. And typically, the way the term's used, it's something that then fails. And we had those since the early, well, since the mid-70s, right? With, depending on it has to fail in your definition, Tunnels and Trolls is the first Fantasy Heartbreaker, right? But there are another, by the end of the 70s, there were a number of other games that were very D&D-like with all the heavy house rules and stuff that have now disappeared into the ether. Although they're being republished in some places. You can find the Sir Pelennor games again and some of these other games that from the early 70s or the late 70s that have been refound and they've been republished now. So we can actually get these early game, these early competitors, these games where people thought, I'm going to improve D&D. We can actually find those now, which is one of the cool things about living when we live. But anyway, so what is a Fantasy Heartbreaker? And how does it relate to the Forge? Edumacate me.
All right. There's Jason Connerly with a very, very, very specific question about a fairly long podcast asking about the term Fantasy Heartbreaker. I have to admit that I'm not going to delve too deeply into the rabbit hole, but, you know, a cursory 20-minute search on the internet has the term coined by Matt Colville and, secondly, Ron Edwards from his famous essay from The Forge, Fantasy Heartbreaker. I do think Fantasy Heartbreakers existed before the essay, but as far as I can tell, the specific term Fantasy Heartbreaker was not actually coined until 2002 on The Forge with Ron Edwards' essay. I think the interesting part about this essay is not too long ago I saw Diogo had put up a thing. I mean, this might have been a couple of years. I even think I did a podcast episode about it and asked around concerning this. But the whole essay itself to Diogo was a huge weight or burden from self-publishing, and he did not like it and said it was a bad essay. In many ways, I think the essay is misunderstood because we as human beings only read and only see what we want to see and don't necessarily read the whole thing. At the end of the essay, basically, he had been pointing out like five different games that had been published in the late 90s and saying, you know, they were only one step away from D&D, but all of them did have some sort of redeeming mechanic or factor in them that nobody paid attention to, because the game was only one factor away from D&D, and there were literally millions of those. And he requested, asked, beseeched people from the Forge to actually play these games and to get these mechanics some use. So is it a bad essay? I don't know. Is it the origin of the term fantasy heartbreaker? I don't know. But I can tell you, that's what I found.
Hey, Hobbs. Just want to jump in and talk about that pregame anxiety that you were saying you were having, and that kind of crippled you on Saturday at North Texas. I totally get that. Right now I'm getting it with my podcast, so I got to remember that I like doing that. But I get it with games, and what really helped me for some strange reason is I just was hanging out with one of my players. I mentioned to him how, like, I need to start playing in the morning because all day I'm anxious about the game. And that, and reminding myself that I like doing this and I have a good time doing this, no matter how I feel I perform, I always have a good time. That's helped me relinquish some of those jitters. And help me move forward. And yeah, sometimes I forget. So having you bring it up and me get to tell you what I do helps me remember. So thanks for helping me remember, Hobbs. Take it easy.
There's Rich from Cockatrice Nuggets, Jerry247 from the Discords. No doubt, man. I mean, I've talked about sometimes the paralyzing panic or anxiety that comes with running games, and how 99.9% of the time it's all unfounded, and it was a big travesty and a trauma inducing for no reason, really. And any of the players would tell you the same, that the difference that they find between games that are super prep for versus not prep. We always have a good time. And yeah, if you can speak logically with your mental abilities or your fears or your anxieties, then it works. But it's not always logical like that. I think that's the biggest problem, really. If it was logical, we would be able to outsmart it most of the time, but
in half a mile, merge onto I-41, I-94 West.
It's really an illogical, and, you know, it makes no sense. It's just a fear, and it's usually self-imposed. I know that's what it is for me, totally. None of the guys are ever say, oh, this better be your best game ever. No, they just want to play because they enjoy the game that I run. It's that simple, and it's definitely something you should be able to convince yourself and remind yourself, but Jesus, however it works, then that's what we have to do. And thanks for calling in, Rich, and letting us know how it works for you. Really appreciate it, man.
If he is up or down, his podcast still comes round. Hobbs is in his van. Don't turn off that sat nav, man. Random screed, don't know what you get, but it's what you need.
These are the days of high adventure.
So like I mentioned last episode, we had a running of Legendary Kalmata at NTX 2023. Well, guess what? That inspired us and those players to have something else they wanted to do. And so I have a new situation. These are probably the highest characters that I've ever ran a game for, which maybe sounds funny, but my comfort zone is definitely complete control as a GM. But, you know, like when I'm playing a story game or something like that, or running something with that, I have no problem mixing up that control. So I think it's just a comfort that I have, you know, that makes me, it's just a comfortable place. It's a safe place where I kind of have a pretty good grasp of what characters can do or not do. And I always say I'm just creating situations for shenanigans, but maybe that's not that simple. I guess what I'm trying to say is I ran Kalmata number 80 recently. We're getting ready to gear up to run the second part of it. And it's a new experience for me running, you know, this middle tier. It feels like a high tier to me. I don't remember how IBX or OSE goes, but geez, I just can't imagine what they would want to do after ninth level. Although, it's not like there aren't threats that characters of that level are necessary for. So it's almost like the designers, how much real play test is ever done for high level BX play, and what is high level BX play? Is it ninth level? Is it seventh level? You know, how many characters have been created from, I'm sure there's a lot, but it's still spread out over the whole universe of BX players and game masters. How often has there been seventh plus level characters? I mean, these guys were already like crossing dimensions and doing, fighting demons and doing shit at third and fourth level, you know. So to boost it up even higher and say now we're dealing with these other things, you know, how much information is there for running that type of game, or let alone playing that type of game? I always say there's just a few things a player really needs to do, is have a motivated character, know what your character can do, and have as much fun as possible without treading on someone else's fun. That's it. That's all a player has to do. And the higher level your character gets, the more difficult it is to not tread on other people. The more difficult it is to know what all your characters can do. For example, in the NTX game, I think the entire quest was saved by a control undead potion. Somebody should have me on their podcast to talk about interesting adventures and how it works out. But I think that's probably common. Your characters, the longer they are around, the longer they've just kind of gathered things. Bajio Gar is always described as a 3-strength thin man with a demonic toad and diaphanous robes. So I wonder where this big bag of backpack with all the shit that he carries around is. Is that? But, you know, it's an abstracted game. Does it matter really? Do we really want to know where Bajio Gar secretes his things? I'm not sure I do. I'm not sure the game needs to be that realistic. I feel like I'm talking to a very select group now. Either you have to have played in a game of Legendary Kalmata with Aaron Coleman, which is a large group of people, first off, or watched some of the Kalmata videos, which maybe is a larger group of people. Hell, I don't know. Anyway, I guess what I'm saying is, how often have you ran higher level games of an OSE / BX game? What do you think about the challenges for the players and the game masters are? And what is some of the advice that you have learned to overcome those challenges? Yeah, that's my question. And another thing, I was just thinking about this topic after reading an article by, and when I say article, it was a blog post. And then it had a thread on Twitter, Prismatic Wasteland. I'm not even sure who that is. probably the person who did Prismatic Wasteland. I should maybe do some more research and find out. Or maybe someone out there could call in and tell me what it is and what they think about it. But it is more categorizing, but maybe categorizing in a better way. I've been seeing, just as this poster mentioned, that the OSR is dead now for years. And I'm actually beginning to agree. I think I knew it, but I didn't really think of it in those terms. I've even done an OSR IP episode on Random Screed. I should go back and listen to it, but I don't know if it matters. What I really want to talk about is this blog post and what it means and why, and just kind of ramble about it a little bit. Basically, the author is saying that the OSR probably really died in 2019. At the end of G+, which I tend to agree with, to be honest. I think that's when I pulled the plug on the OSR portion of Hobbs and Friends of the OSR and just made it Hobbs and Friends, and I think it's way better for it. Further, one of my goals was always to bridge that the end of the horseshoe gap between story games and trad gamers, and after reading that article, I feel like it's already been done. That's what the NSR actually is they've basically taken all those story game type things, started either like way back when in Dungeon World and continued on into games like Knave and Beyond. And now you have like a whole collection of people writing subsets of Into the Odd and Knave and Beyond the Wall, all those games. And there's just a larger story game element to them. And that's awesome. And I think that's the NSR. The author also posited the POSR, the post-OSR, the post-old-school revival or renaissance, where things have shifted heavily procedural, even beyond what they were in the OSR. And I think that's accurate, too. I mean, I have a whole young crowd of people playing Chainmail, Zero E put together with lots and lots of procedures, procedure after procedure. And maybe that's where Torchbearer fits in. And there's aspects of some NSR games that also fit into this procedural type. Many of my games kind of have that feel, but not all the way, because I'm also a real narrativist as far as it goes. So they basically have said there's three aspects of the OSR. One is the scene, one is the play style, and one is the brand. The brand continues. The brand thrives. The brand is massive and continually growing. The other things have transcended, transitioned, shifted. I think you can see people using the BROSR for the Brazilian and then the BROSR, who I probably won't talk a lot about because I don't know, their particular antics annoy me sometimes. We had the FOEs for a long time, false OSR enthusiasts, which in many ways is not even an accurate name because they're not false OSR. They're just false OSR procedural, and they're more in the NSR group. And that's just fascinating. It's all so splintered now, ever since the end of G+, compared to the way it was during the G+ era. Discord is a terrible way to shift information and share and communicate, even really. And Twitter is not any better. And then what else do you have? Facebook, Mastodon. My experience with Mastodon is not that much different than Instagram or any of those others. And none of them are even close. All of them combined are not close to what G+ was. And now G+ wasn't perfect, don't get me wrong. You still had a lot of bad actors who were the loudest and the most annoying, and their antics have continued today to mar what could have been a beautiful thing. But that's the way all beauty is. The eye of the beholder. What's a mar and what's a bug and what's a feature? I don't know. What do you think? Is the OSR dead? Have you played games from these different POSR, post-OSR? Maybe I'll link the the Prismatic's Wasteland blog. I find it fascinating, though. Check it out. Stay alive. Be good, people. Talk to you soon.
It's a beautiful day in the game, oh, a beautiful day for my gamers.
Would you be one?
Could you be one? Out of that thunder, but don't despair. This colony's breeding great robbers. Would you be one? Could you be one? If an 80% mortality rate works for you, for a few bucks a month you can sign up and have the hogs kill you. So let's make the most of another Sunday. Brew up some coffee and play it my way. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my gamers? Won't you be, won't you please, please won't you be my gamers?